Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live, and a very happy Monday to you. I hope you are having a happy Monday. It's always a happy Monday here for us. It's always great to get back to work, get back here and start talking about the faith, start talking about Jesus, start talking about the Bible, start talking about moral issues, and we're grateful that you make it possible for us to do that. Thanks for being with us. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and today we're going to open the lines up to pro-choice people. Trent Horn is our guest, and if you are a pro-choice person and would like to tell us about why you're pro-choice, if you'd like to engage in conversation with us, dialogue with us about being pro-choice, being pro-life, those things, we'd welcome your call, 888-318-7884. We just have to tell our usual callers who are, I mean, we don't make any bones about being pro-life. We're pro-life people all the way top to bottom. Here in our at the apostolate at Catholic Answers, Trent and I are both personally pro-life people, and so we're not trying to fool anybody about that. Most of our callers, most of the time, probably are pro-life people. But today we want to just leave it open to pro-choice people. If you're a pro-choice person, let me try to define that for you a little bit. If you're a person who does not believe, as we do, that from the time of conception until natural death, that human life is sacred and must be defended both morally and legally, then to some degree, you're a pro-choice person. You might say, well, I'm not really a pro-choice person. I only believe in abortion, say, up to 20 weeks. Well, you can count yourself among the pro-choice people for our, however you may define yourself, for our definition, if you believe in abortion at all. You're a pro-choice person, and we would love to hear your perspective. 888-318-7884. Our guest, as I said, is Trent Horn, someone we've been missing a lot around here and are happy to have back. Just got him back last week, and we're keeping him. We're not letting him go. He's the father now of three boys, and that's why we were missing him for a while. He was taking care of mom and sons, and now he's back here to take care of defending the pro-life position. Trent is an apologist here, the author of many books, including Persuasive Pro-Life and Why We're Catholic. 888-318-7884 is our number. Trent, welcome back again.
You can let me go, Cy. You can let me go. I will come. You know what they say? If you love something and you let it go and it comes back, that proves that it knows where you live.
Oh, I had always heard the proverb, if you love something, let it go. If it comes back to you, it's yours. And if it doesn't come back to you, hunt it down and kill it. Have you, you've never heard that? Did I hear that wrong?
I haven't heard that, but hopefully we'll continue to evade you if that is your the maxim of choice you live
actually,
by.
The one who usually, oh my goodness, Trent, don't kill me anymore. Because just as much as, you know, I tease you about things.
You do.
And people defend you, especially our friend in Czechoslovakia.
It's endearing.
Defends you. Now people are writing saying, I'm tired of people killing Cy. It's not funny. Stop killing Cy. So don't do it.
Really?
Anymore. Yes, I know. Trent, for example, Trent is not the, he's not the worst offender in this regard.
All right, Cy, I tell you what, I promise at least for this show, I will not kill you.
No. All right.
I promise
okay,
I will kill
very
you.
Very good.
I will not kill you.
But I know that the reason that you do it is that you want to have an example of, you're trying to make a almost an argument ad absurdum. Would you kill Cy in this circumstance? The shocking thing is the number of times people have said either yes or I don't know.
It's the you know what's really shocking? It's
that part I don't like.
The I don't know ones are the more disturbing to me. But yeah, so if you're a pro-choice advocate, however you define that, you believe abortion should be legal in some stripe, give us a call. And I mean, I've written a book on this. I've done debates on it. But I really cut my teeth in this area, dialoguing with hundreds, if not thousands of people. At least in view of thousands of people through the years I spent going to university campuses, engaging students on this issue as part of a pro-life outreach work that I did. And I've done a lot of different conversations, and I really enjoy talking to people really about the faith in general. But I think this is an important issue, and it's one that is probably on many people's minds because we just got done, or we're still in the midst of, depending on how you look at it, the election season. In the election, the votes were cast on Tuesday, and there's still all controversy and things like that. But we're in the midst of election, and abortion is certainly a big issue, though I will say, Si,
and we got a Supreme Court justice, and that was the main.
That was one of the big ones when
kind of undercurrent.
When when Amy Coney Barrett was nominated and then confirmed to the Supreme Court, one of the big things that she was asked during her confirmation hearings were her views on Roe versus Wade, which goes back really a long time in the history of Supreme Court confirmations and nominations. Probably one of the most famous ones is back in the 1980s when Robert Bork was nominated to the Supreme Court, and abortion was one of the issues that pro-choice politicians across the aisle said that they did not want to confirm him out of fear that he would overturn Roe versus Wade. I believe it was Ted Kennedy who said, like 45 seconds after he was announced, he got on the news and said, Judge Bork's America, women will be placed in back alley abortions. Yeah, yeah. And to which from that came the terminology, the verb borking. A few years later, this was during the confirmation hearings of Justice Clarence Thomas. At a conference of the National Organization of Women, one of the feminists present at that conference said of Justice Clarence Thomas, saying, we're going to get him, we're going to bork this little creep. And now the word bork is entered, I think, the Oxford English Dictionary to mean to publicly vilify someone or defame someone to prevent them from receiving higher office, especially confirmation to the judiciary.
If I may, Trent, sure. I think that that points to a truth that we don't like to admit, at least the secular media does not like to admit,
that
when people go, why are we so divided? Why have we become so divided? I'm going to tell you why. Abortion. That is where the modern divide in politics begins.
Right.
And frankly, I think that's where it ends. Until that is dealt with properly, it will not end. And you can see the evidence for it in something like the way Supreme Court justices are handled for the entire history of the United States until after Roe versus Wade, and then it becomes a completely different animal with Justice Bork and all the others.
Right.
888-318-7884, our number. This is the seminal issue. Whatever people pretend the issue is, and I do believe there's a lot of pretending, at the root of it, half of our country, perhaps more than half of our country, would permit the killing of children to continue. Half of our country, depending on how you ask the question, perhaps more than half of our country, says no, this has to stop. You cannot have a healthy, whole society that allows the killing of children. We find ourselves on the don't kill the children side. 888-318-7884 is the number. If you find yourself on the pro-choice side, we will try to be polite and use the polite words and terminology as we speak to you. But I think when I set it out starkly, I set it out honestly. 888-318-7884. Only pro-choice people can get through the lines today. Already, I see Marie sending people away. Don't call if you're a pro-life person. We only want to talk to the pro-choicers. I was reading a great Catholic magazine, a really great Catholic magazine, and this question was in there, Trent, so I'm going to give it to you. The guy who answered it did a beautiful job, but so what if a fetus is alive in human? Every cell in my body is alive in human. Is every cell in my body a human being? Mm. Are sperm and egg cells human beings too?
All right.
How would you answer that if it was you? And then I'll tell you who the guy who was who'd answered it in this fine Catholic magazine.
Well, I think I would say, Si, that sperm, egg, body cells are alive, they're growing, they have human DNA, but they're not human beings like you or me or an unborn child because they're not an organism. They're not an individual living being. So how do we know something is an individual living being, an organism, rather than a body part or an organ? I actually have a little handy moniker to remember that, an acronym, NET, N-E-T, the NET test. If I can give this thing nutrition, environment, and time, can it develop into a mature member of a species?
Oh.
So if you look at you, me, a kitten, a puppy, a baby, an unborn embryo, fetus, nutrition, the proper environment and time, and they will continue to develop. Not all of them will. Some will die naturally or at the hands of others, but they have that capacity. Sperm, egg, cancer cells, skin cells, they'll always be those things, no matter what nutrients you give them, no matter what environment you put them in,
right,
no matter how much time you give them. They're not organisms. And so that helps us to determine that the unborn are very clearly human organisms or individual members of the human species. That's the scientific truth. Now, science cannot resolve the abortion debate, just like science can't prove abortion is wrong any more than science can prove racism is wrong. Science doesn't do that. It tells us what things are, not how we should treat them. Science tells us the unborn are individual members of the human species. It's up to philosophy and religious reasoning to come to the conclusions about how we ought to treat every member of the human species. And I say we should treat them equally.
888-318-7884 is the number. By the way, trick question. That great Catholic magazine, it was Catholic Answers magazine.
Whoa.
That's right. And do you know who the author was who answered the question in there?
I can only imagine.
You already know. It was you. It was Trent Horn.
It was me.
All right, we'll take a break.
Those were the days that that young kid in there from three months ago.
A month, yeah, that young guy.
Sprite.
Who hadn't delivered any babies yet.
Right.
But now
he was
he's delivered
green
one.
To the world.
If you don't know the story about Trent Horn delivering his third child, then you just go to his podcast and listen. He's got the episode up there about how he and Laura teamed up to deliver the baby at home. I'm going to give you a little I'm going to kind of mess up the story a little bit. I'll go to the ending. Laura did more work than Trent did.
As per usual.
888-318-7884. 888-31-TRUTH is our number. We're only talking to pro-choice people, and we're going to get immediately to pro-choice callers when we come back, and we'll just leave the entire 2 hours to pro-choice callers. Call, make your argument, ask your question if you want to argue with something that we've said. It's all on the table. We want to have the discussion. As a matter of fact, we believe, I'm going to be frank, why this makes us better media than almost every other media you will find anywhere in America. We want to talk about abortion. When everybody else is trying not to talk about it, we're trying to talk about it. So give a call if you're a pro-choice person. 888-318-7884.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
EWTN is now on Twitter. Get short, timely messages from EWTN on your computer or cell phone. It's easy to stay up to date on a wide variety of topics. Pro-life news, Vatican announcements, catechesis, apologetics, the latest EWTN programming, and more. You can link to EWTN on Twitter from our homepage or go to twitter.com/EWTN. At work, at home, at school, and on the road, stay connected to your world with EWTN's Twitter page.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at magnificat.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. All the phone lines belong to pro-choice people today. If you're a pro-choice person and you'd like to explain to us why you're pro-choice, argue with us, try to argue us out of our position of being pro-life, or just have a conversation about abortion and life, 888-318-7884. If you are a professional caller and you've been trained, that's all right. We don't care. If you've never called a radio show before, we don't care. We want to talk about this, 888-318-7884. Up first, Trent Horn, you ready to go to calls, by the way?
Yeah,
I didn't ask your permission. Damien in Boston, Massachusetts, you are up first today, Damien. Go ahead with your question for Trent Horn or your comment or whatever you got.
Hi, gentlemen there. I'm pretty much, my position is that bodily autonomy supersedes someone else's right to life. And I'm just going to go right off the bat and reject the idea of the fallacy of the natural argument for what bodily organs are naturally designed to do. That's a fallacy to me, because what something is naturally designed to do is irrelevant to the moral question of what we concede to do with our body.
Okay.
So I'd like to see what you think about that.
Okay. So first, I'm skeptical of your premise that bodily autonomy is prior to the right to life, that if there's a conflict between a person's bodily autonomy and someone else's right to life, bodily autonomy wins out. Is that what you're saying?
That seems to be how we're applying the morals and the laws once somebody is born. But before they're born, we flip those where that person's right to life supersedes someone else's bodily autonomy. But once somebody is born, because that if we made it where that issue would affect fathers, then we would be having a different discussion. But because it only affects mothers, this isn't a problem for you guys, apparently, because if it was a problem, if you wanted to apply it equally, then if you have a child, both parents should be on the hook where their bodily autonomy is secondary to the life of their child. So that way, once the child is born, the father should be on the hook where he loses his bodily autonomy if his daughter needs an organ transplant. If he, for instance, causes a car accident and now his daughter was victim of that by his action. But we force this on women, which makes his position completely sexist on the y'all's position.
Okay. Let's define what you mean by bodily autonomy then, because I think you have a narrow subset understanding of what you would mean by bodily autonomy. It sounds like you're comparing abortion, the act of aborting an unborn child, with the act of refusing to donate an organ to save a person who is dying. Because I think that if you just mean bodily autonomy in the broad sense, I don't think that it's I think that's a very weak argument to say bodily autonomy trumps the right to life. For example, suppose you had a person sleeping on a bench under a blanket, and a very large man sits down on the bench and accidentally starts asphyxiating this person. And we might say, you need to get off this person, he's going to die. I mean, this gentleman, we could call him Big Bob. Big Bob says, well, I don't have to move. I have bodily autonomy. I don't have to move or do anything with my body that you can't make me do that, even if it causes this person to die. So that would be one example. Another one that I could have off the top of my head would be, and this one would just be a bit more... we'll see how it goes here. Suppose a serial killer kidnapped Mr. Syke Hellett and kept him in a box, like buried underground, or kept him in something where he's running out of air, and there's only one key to open the box, and the serial killer swallows the key, and it's in his stomach. And Mr. Syke Hellett is going to perish if we don't get that key back.
Get it out.
I think we'd be justified in making him vomit that up to rescue him.
I do.
And his bodily autonomy wouldn't trump that. Mm-hmm. So do you see where I'm concerned about broad bodily autonomy versus kind of the narrow organ donation thing? What do you think of that?
Yeah, I'm a situational ethicist. So based on the specific situations of the specific event, ethics are going. You need a discussion to understand where the line is. That's why we have different levels of murder, of killing somebody, because the situation matters.
Sure.
I don't believe in these hard absolutes that this hard moral fact applies to everything across the board. It's situational.
So then if it's situational, that means sometimes a person's life would trump another person's bodily autonomy. Bodily autonomy is an absolute.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you there, because I was still making the point that those two examples that you brought up, funny how they never happen in reality. Could you give an example of this bodily autonomy issue that actually applies to a real-life situation of what we're dealing with here? Because that is the situation.
Well, Damien, why should I do that when the most famous thought experiment on abortion that philosophers have discussed for 50 years, Thompson's violinist argument, has never happened and probably will never happen? Why should I do that?
Because I would like to see if your ethics actually apply to reality that we all experience instead of some theoretical idea.
Well, I'm sure I could just get on the internet and find a case of somebody using their bodily autonomy against other people, but I'm trying to engage you in a discussion to test your ideas. And I think the first example of mine of one person using their body to asphyxiate another person is not far-fetched. The example I gave with Cy might show up in a TV show like Criminal Minds, but it's still more realistic than Thompson's violinist example. Let's just go back to Big Bob. Does Big Bob have a right to say, I don't have to move my body and can asphyxiate the person he's sitting on?
Now, if he doesn't have the mental capability of empathy of that situation, then that's a different scenario. But no normal human being would asphyxiate somebody in that situation.
That's true, but I also
think... Because a specific example, Big Bob there isn't physically hooked up to somebody that he didn't know was actually hooked up to him. So that's why I kind of reject that scenario in this discussion.
Okay, so it's about being hooked up. It's about more of an intimate situation then. Well, let's just go back to Thompson's violin scenario. Let's say somebody hooks up another, takes an innocent person, hooks them up to their body, and causes them to be dependent on them. So, you know, so Bob kidnaps Fred, hooks Fred up to his body. Fred is now dependent on Bob's body in order to live. And then Bob decides that he has bodily autonomy. He does not want to sustain Fred's life anymore. And so then he disconnects and causes Fred to die. Do you think that would be immoral?
Yes, I do, because he knowingly caused the situation. This wasn't, and the difference in that's in this situation and in the pregnancy situation, the woman engaged in consensual sex, but she didn't consent to the pregnancy as a result of it. She didn't know that somebody's now hooked up to her. Once she discovers this, that she didn't participate in anything of volunteering that to happen to her body.
Well, Damien, let me ask you this question. What is sexual intercourse?
Sexual intercourse is, here's how I'm distinguishing that. Sexual intercourse is, I give the analogies like rock climbing. We consent to rock climbing, but we don't consent to keeping a broken arm if we fall from rock climbing as a bad result of rock climbing. She consents to sex. She doesn't consent to the bad results of being pregnant. Well, she takes the responsibility of addressing that, just like I would address the issue of a broken arm.
Let me try another example then. Suppose Bob drinks a bunch of alcohol and gets in his car and drives. And then he ends up hitting another car when he's inebriated and injures or kills the people in that car. So would it fly if Bob were to say, I consented to driving drunk, but I never consented to causing a car accident. Therefore, I can't be held morally responsible for the accident that ensued because I never consented to that. It seems to me if you engage in an activity that is naturally ordered toward, that is ordered towards a certain end, you have a moral responsibility to that end. If a person drinks copious amounts of alcohol and gets in a car, you can reasonably know that they are putting other people in danger and can be held responsible for that. When a man and a woman engage in sexual intercourse, the activity is naturally ordered towards creating a helpless human being. And it seems to me they would be responsible for the human being that comes into existence. Why wouldn't they if everybody knows that's what sexual intercourse is ordered towards?
Okay, then I guess you agree with me that if fathers who aren't getting drunk putting their daughters in the backseat of their car and they do everything to keep their daughters safe and get in an accident, they should be legally required to give up their bodily autonomy to save the life of their daughter.
You mean if they require some kind of a blood donation or something like that because of the accident that ensues?
Correct. The father should have no legal right to refuse that. If you're going to do that to women, you have to do it to fathers.
Well, I think I'm not exactly sure what a person should be required to do if they directly cause a person to be in their need. So, for example, if somebody causes a car accident and causes a person to be in a condition where they require tissue or blood donation from another person to live as a direct result of their actions, I'm not sure in some of those cases what the right or the wrong answer may be. It may apply in some, it may not apply in others. But I think when it comes to the issue of abortion, it's very, very clear that it's not the same as if Bob and Fred, if Fred develops leukemia and requires bone marrow, and Bob is not responsible for Fred needing that bone marrow, then I don't see the connection there. If he chooses not to donate bone marrow, that's not killing Fred. It's just failing to save him. But in pregnancy, you have a healthy child. It's not like organ donation. The child is perfectly healthy. Abortion intervenes and starts the fatal sequence of events that ends up killing the child. Whereas refusing to donate an organ That is not what starts the fatal sequence of events, and so moral responsibility doesn't play in. I cover that a little bit more in depth in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, as well as my debate with David Boonen. Listeners can check that out at Catholic.com. But we're coming up here to the end of our hard break. But Damien, I do appreciate the intellectually stimulating conversation. Hopefully we can address it more at length in a future episode or a future, you know, time here on the show. But I am grateful that you called in. And for our listeners, I would definitely recommend those resources, including Persuasive Pro-Life. But ultimately, I would say that bodily autonomy, in the case of organ donation, is not comparable to the case of abortion. And then Damien brought up earlier about the natural use of one's organs. He rejects the idea that the uterus is naturally ordered towards sustaining a child, so there's a moral duty there, whereas my kidneys aren't made for someone else. I think that's actually a very clear difference. I think many of our listeners would agree as well.
Damien, thank you very, very much. Glad we're able to spend that time with you. There are more callers. We're going to get to them when we come back. We have to take this break. This time, it's only open to pro-choice callers. If you're a pro-choice caller, give us a call, 888-31-TRUTH.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Did you know you can access Catholic Answers Live right from your phone or other mobile device? Download the Catholic Answers Live app today. The Catholic Answers Live app, available now on iOS and Android.
To many people, even many Christians, purgatory is a fantasy, or worse, a wicked lie invented by the church to make salvation complicated and keep people in fear. But I'm here to tell you that purgatory is fact, not fiction. The Bible supports it, Christians have historically believed in it, and it makes theological sense. In my new book, Purgatory is for Real, I provide the evidence and reasoning to help you understand this controversial doctrine and demonstrate how it's actually a joyful, hopeful reality, not something shadowy and mysterious, but a sign of God's love and mercy. To get your copy of Purgatory is for Real, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This is Dr. David Anders. Does the problem of evil keep you from believing in God?
Join us for Call to Communion tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern.
Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, joined in studio by Trent Horn, apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of many books, including Why We're Catholic, and the one that's probably most pertinent to, well, although life issues are covered in Why We're Catholic and some of Trent's other work, his probably the most germane book is, I'm going to have to look that up later, see if I use the word germane correctly, Persuasive Pro-Life. You're welcome to call if you are not pro-life, if you're a pro-choice. Well, I shouldn't say it that way, because some pro-choice people say I'm both pro-choice and pro-life. So however you classify yourself, if you believe in abortion at any point, that it must be allowed legally or that it's morally permissible, then you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. Trent and I feel confident because I've listened to Trent so many times in saying this, so you'll have to correct me. But Trent and I are both 100% pro-life from the moment of conception until the moment of natural death. And if you take exception to that in any way, I'm going to let you be in the pro-choice category, and you can call 888-318-7884. Joel in St. Louis is next. St. Louis is in Missouri, and Joel is on line one. Hi, Joel. You got a comment or question for Trent?
Yeah, I guess so. I'm not really sure how to approach it.
Sure.
I thought I had a point, but I kind of lost it. I got caught up in the philosophical ping pong that you guys were playing with the previous caller, and that guy sounded like he was pretty well versed on pretty much everything from Plato to I don't even know.
Plato to Play-Doh and everything in between. But go ahead, Joel. We'll help you find what you're thinking
about. But Joel, you consider yourself a pro-choice person?
Yeah, I think so.
And so why? So. Why are you pro-choice?
Because I don't. I think that it requires the spark of religion to the spark of organized religion to come to the conclusion that it's amoral to terminate an unwanted pregnancy. I think that there's an assumption that has to be made that there's some kind of a spark or some kind of a magic to humanness that doesn't exist in other animals and things like that.
Oh.
Let me ask you this. So are you guys both vegans? Do you protest against any kind of wars, or do you go, you know, I mean, anything where a human would potentially be killed? Are you against the death penalty? I mean,
that's a wide variety of questions, Joel. I'll answer according to a Catholic perspective on them. I would say that human beings have intrinsic dignity and intrinsic rights. So they are beings of value and moral agents. They are different than other animals. So I would say that it is always wrong to directly kill an innocent human being. I would say, moreover, that when we are facing threats to human life, we ought to use non-lethal means whenever possible, and lethal means only as a last resort. So the Catholic Church teaches, for example, that the death penalty is inadmissible. It is something we ought not do in a society that has the means to restrain violent criminals. In war should be a last resort, and innocent civilians should not be targeted. But in some cases, it's regrettable that in combating grave evils in war, innocent civilians may die unintentionally. But we should never directly kill innocent people. But that may be a foreseen but unintended consequence of things like war. When it comes to non-human animals, I believe non-human animals do not have a right to life like human beings do. However, I believe that animals that are capable of suffering, I believe it is immoral to cause them suffering without a good reason. So I believe it's sinful to be cruel to animals. However, I think there is nothing immoral per se about eating animals. I believe that animals can be used to serve human needs, but it should be done in a way that causes the least amount of pain and suffering to the animals. So I guess that'd be my broad brushstroke of understanding human value, animal value, and the ethics of killing. Is that would you like to start there?
I think you took care of that. I mean, there are different value systems that people come to the table with.
And sure.
I
think what do you think yours is?
Yeah. I think that I think we probably grew up in very different ways. I mean, I think that like
you'd be surprised
when you have like parents that were, you know, heroin addicts that, you know, committed suicide on Christmas Eve. And,
oh, good,
you know,
Lord, Joel.
Like,
I'm sorry.
I'm very sorry to hear that.
I mean, they're just like to have this like optimistic and lovely view of humanity. Like, just I don't know. I think you have to grow up in this environment that tells you that that's the way things are. And I just think that there's another reality for a lot of people where, you know, bringing a child into a situation or a home would be basically torturing a baby. You know.
Yeah. Well, Joel, I'm very grieved and saddened. I, I mean, I'm thinking about the situation you're in. How old were you when your parents took their own lives?
It doesn't matter. Sure. It wasn't at the same time.
I see.
It was one. And yeah.
Well, were you a little kid or an older kid?
No, I was older.
I see.
I mean, it's just like the things that led up to that. I mean, it was, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, there are some people that don't need to have children. I mean, they're just broken for one reason or another. And
it's ironic, Joel. You know, sometimes there are people I know who are the greatest people in the world and they're infertile. They can't have kids. And there are some people who have children and you wonder why in the world would God allow them to have a child. And for us, as a Christian, as a believer, I confess that I don't have an answer for every kind of evil that exists, why God would allow something like that to happen. I don't. The only answer I cling to when, and I've endured suffering, I know people who've endured horrible suffering and have tremendous faith in God, is that if God doesn't exist, we're just molecules in motion, and we live, we die, injustice happens, cruel evils happen, and there's no redemption for it. And we'll go back, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. It doesn't matter. But if God exists, there's a way for that. The people who have been wronged, there's a way for them to be compensated with infinite, unending happiness. God will wipe away every tear. He will make it right. And I believe, honestly, Joel, that because we have that deep, burning desire inside, I believe that humans and animals are different because humans have a deep, abiding understanding. There are some things in the world that should not happen. We, you know, animals just go through life by instinct. It's kill or be killed, eat or be eaten. But human beings, we can think about things and we can reach conclusions like when your parents took their own lives and abandoned you or got hooked on drugs and were engaged in these destructive decisions. We can shout we can say, no, that's not right. That's not the way things should be. That's not the way things should happen. And because we have that deep sense, there's a way things, they're not supposed to be a certain way. To me, that implies there is a way things are supposed to be. There's like a plan for the universe. It's broken right now, but it's moving. There's a way to move it towards being fixed. And I believe what fixes that is a man named Jesus Christ. And I firmly believe that with my whole being. So I believe that, Joel, that this show's about abortion, but what we're talking about here is even deeper than that. You know, you can't see abortions right or wrong unless you see every human life matters, no matter who their parents are, no matter where they're born, no matter who they are. Every human being is precious, and it is good they exist. It's good you exist. I am glad you exist. You are a blessing to the world, and God has made it so that you exist to be a blessing to the world and for you to know him. So what I would like to do is just get your email, and I have a little booklet my friend Jimmy Akin wrote called God's Love for You. I'd love to send to you. And I'll ask our listeners, and we've got hundreds of thousands, millions of people who listen to this show, to pray for you, Joel in St. Louis, Missouri, to pray for your heart, your healing, and your soul. And if you could give your email address to our call screener, I would like to get you some resources, but that's what I can offer you now. Is that at least a decent start?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay.
Joel, I really appreciate that you called just in a very honest way to share where you're coming from on this. I hope you'll call us again sometime. I mean, we really are. I mean, when you share that, even that detail about your life, it's obvious that you have been through extraordinary things. And so it's a privilege just to get to speak with you, but maybe we can talk in the future. I hope that's the case anyways, Joel. I appreciate your call. And I think whatever your belief might be, I can tell you right now, there are many, many people praying for you because they're telling us on Facebook that they're praying for you. So I hope we'll talk again. All right, Joel?
Okay. Thank you.
God bless you, brother. I'm putting them on hold for you, Marie. We better take a quick break. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back with Why Are You Pro-Choice? Pro-Choice callers only today, 888-318-7884.
Call us now with your question. Hello? On Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He is honored by the church as one of the greatest enemies of clergy sexual abuse.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
In his time, St. Peter Damian fought against the many vices of contemporary clergy, especially sexual abuses among the clergy. In 1051, he wrote the Book of Gomorrah that is still considered essential reading for fighting abuse today. He died in 1072.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. If you're a pro-choice person, this hour and next are for you. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. I'll tell you, we like all kinds of callers. We like callers who argue with us. We like callers who spar intellectually with us. But the, Joel, our previous caller, is, I don't know, there's a particular... I guess there's a humanness when someone just calls up and is honest with you about where they're coming from, and then you have a conversation.
Oh,
yeah. It's not necessarily about changing each other's minds, but it just seems so rare in the world today. Everyone's got a position and a take, and then there's a person who just calls up who he may disagree with us on something that is very, very precious to us, but he speaks to us like a human being. And that I just think we all got to work on that, speaking to one another like human beings.
Mm. No, I agree. And especially... You know, in the midst of this election, we talk about unity. We talk about bipartisanship.
Not
a
me.
Divided
I never
country.
Talk about those things.
No, oh, okay.
I'm
using the magisterial. We
okay.
In our kingdom, yeah. We talk about these things. The collective we, and we do need to have important conversations, both about personal issues that we're struggling with, but also issues just we as a country. And yeah, to talk as human beings doesn't mean we set aside our arguments. We should present them to each other and discuss them. But it's nice. I don't mind debates. I've done over a dozen formal debates, done dialogues. They can be very entertaining and engaging. I'll be doing one this Friday, actually, on Matt Frad's podcast. So,
but you're debating Matt Frad? No.
No, on Matt Frad's podcast.
Oh, he's got another someone else for you to
yes,
debate.
Yes, he hosts debates. I'm going to debate Steve Christie on the Deuterocanonical Books of Scripture. On why are should we believe in the Protestant Old Testament canon is what we'll be debating. So I love doing debates.
Is Matt Frad still pretending to be Australian? Is he still using that fake Australian accent?
Oh, are you part of Australianon, the conspiracy theory that Matt Frad's not really Australian?
Yes, I am part of that conspiracy theory. Our number is 888-318-7884. Trent Horn is our guest. He's the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, among many other things. And we welcome your call if you are a pro-choice person. And whatever the point is you'd like to make, we'd love to have a conversation with you about it. Gene in North Carolina, you are next. Thank you for waiting patiently, Gene. Why are you pro-choice?
Yes, hello, and thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I struggle and I'm guilty with this, but I don't feel society or the lawmakers are going to go the whole way and protect women against the black market of abortion if they roll over Roe versus Wade.
Right, so you think there'll be a kind of like what's called back alley abortion. That's not all. I mean, that's just the euphemism, but that abortion will still be available, but it'll just be really dangerous. Is that kind of where you're coming from, Gene?
Yes. I mean,
okay.
They have to call it murder. Get rid of the word abortion.
I gotcha.
Well, you could call it that. What you would do? Well, no, they wouldn't call it. They would call it abortion. They call it the crime. Just you would restore the legal codes that existed prior to Roe versus Wade, and under those laws, there were penalties for performing abortions. unless a woman's life was in danger. Those were the common laws across the country prior to the 1950s. They got liberalized a little in the 1960s and 70s. But you basically just had laws that criminalized abortion and specified that without holding... I'm not aware of, in the United States, of women being punished for going to see an abortionist, for example. But there could be cases where someone could be held liable for causing the death of their own unborn child. We do this, for example, today with men who cause the deaths of their unborn children. Like if a man kills his pregnant girlfriend because she won't get an abortion, and I think over 36 states and in under federal law, that is double homicide. So it seems like we've got a little bit of inconsistency on our hands here. Some points, though, on the argument. Well, what about women? If abortion is made illegal, what about women who will break the law? From a moral perspective, I think we have to admit that whenever laws are passed, most people will follow the law. Some people will break the law and will do risky things in order to break the law. But we don't make it safer for lawbreakers to hurt innocent people. It seems to me that this argument, Gene, it just sounds, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but this is what it sounds like. We ought to keep abortion legal so women who obtain abortions don't get injured or killed in back alley abortions. That's basically the principle of it ought to be legal for bigger people to kill smaller people so that it is safer for the bigger people. That to me sounds like a horrifying moral principle. I think it sounds really bad when you put it that way. We ought to keep it legal so that it's for bigger people to kill smaller people so that it's safer for the bigger people. That just seems totally unjust to me. What do you think?
That's where my guilt comes in on this position. Uh-huh. I don't feel comfortable.
Yeah, I don't feel comfortable either.
But I don't think we're not going to do it right. We're not going to, they're going to overturn it, or if and when they overturn it, they're not going to take care of the other side of the street, which really, you know, makes it severely punishable for a doctor to commit abortion.
Gene, here's what I would say. There's a difference between saying abortion is wrong, saying it ought to be outlawed, and crafting the law to meet people where they are at. So there are different ways that the law can be applied to deal with social evils. And some people may say that it's inconsistent, but it's not. Let me give you an analogy. In some places, in order to stop the violence and injuries that are associated with prostitution, the crime of prostitution, in some jurisdictions, it is illegal to pay for prostitution services, but it is not illegal to offer prostitution services, which at first seems inconsistent. Like if it's a crime, the people who buy it and the people who offer it ought to be treated equally. But people have come to see, well, many women who offer, you know, and frankly, also men too, who offer prostitution services do so from a place of need. They have drug addictions. They're in poverty. They're being exploited. We want to get them out of this situation. And to encourage them to approach that if they were prosecuted, these prostitutes may not come forward out of fear of being criminalized. So there's an inconsistency where the law doesn't apply to those who sell the service, only to the Johns and others who buy the service in order to stop this evil from spreading. Now, I know it's not a perfect analogy because prostitution, the victim involved, you know, is the person who's offering these services or trying to help. There's not like a third party involved necessarily. But I think that it offers us one example. Another example would be after the Civil War, after the Civil War, the United States could have thrown all the Confederate soldiers in prison or had them all hung for treason. And they didn't do that because that would have just caused a second Civil War, even though they had the right to do that probably, at least according to some scholars or people at the time. I would say that if abortion were to be made illegal again, laws would be crafted and punishments would be understood to take into account the divisiveness of our country, the moral culpability of different women who are involved. There would be harsher punishments for abortion providers than for the women seeking these services. As I say in my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, we could even model laws, even if some women are held morally responsible for abortions, that the punishment for obtaining an abortion could be called the crime of feticide, similar to how in Great Britain there is a separate crime from murder called the crime of infanticide. And there's a recognition that women who end the lives of their own newborns are not punished. They're punished, but not as severely as those who commit first-degree murder, because they typically are under emotional duress. They're not a threat to the general population as a whole. And so they're treated differently. So we could have similar kinds of feticide laws here to protect the unborn and craft different kinds of punishments that make sense from a legal perspective. But what I would say, Gene, is this, that we don't want to get lost too much in the question of what should the punishment be for committing this crime based on the different actors involved. Punishments are complicated. Protecting innocent life is simple. If the unborn are human beings, it just should be illegal to kill them like any other human being. And we'll see how that fits into legal codes as it's applied in various cases. So is that helpful?
It's helpful. Yeah, it's helpful. That's where I am. I'm all torn up. But I just, like, if you have a younger daughter, and would you want them to be in this society that, you know, it says abortion is illegal, but it's, you know, you can still get it done type of thing.
Well, what I would want from my children, I don't have any daughters myself. Things may change in the future. You never know, but I would want my sons, if they were involved in a situation like this, to know, look, I always tell my sons this, you'll never regret doing the right thing. You will never regret doing the right thing. It may be hard, it may be difficult, but you'll never regret it. You just won't. And so if you're in a situation, look, do the right thing. Yeah, your life may change a lot if you become party to an unintended pregnancy. But your life's going to change a lot also if you become party to being an accomplice to ending the life of your own child. That will change a lot, and far more for the worse. So I would just say that to anyone I would know personally who faces an unintended pregnancy, do the right thing. And this applies in all aspects of our life. Like, I would be concerned, Gene, if we just said, well, if you have an unintended pregnancy, we got to leave this out because it's a really hard situation. Well, if we say it's okay to end the life of a human being because you're in a difficult situation, then why not say it's okay to rob that bank if you're really poor? It's okay to defraud this person or cost this person their job so you can get that job that you really need. It's okay to do whatever you want if you're in a tough spot. I mean, if we allow it, if we allow that to justify ending human life because someone is in a very difficult life situation, we've opened up a can of worms that I find to be very, very troubling. To under the mindset. I believe the mindset we should operate with is, to quote Spike Lee, do the right thing. We should do the right thing. Not, well, you should be able to do what would be best for you in this situation, regardless of how it affects other people. That's not the kind of world I want to live in.
Could I just turn that around a little bit too? Because Gene's question is about, you know, say you have a young daughter, she's 12 or 13 years old, and right. She's pregnant in a world where you can't get a legal abortion, but you can get an illegal abortion. But right. Gene, I would just ask you, the world that we live in today, I live in the state of California where a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old can almost all the time when she's pregnant, it's a case of statutory rape. We know that statistically. And so she goes to get the abortion without her parents ever knowing, because that's legal in the state of California. And now we've covered up the evidence of statutory rape. I don't want to live in that world.
Yeah, that's another issue to consider. Absolutely.
What do you think, Gene?
I think that's horrible. Mm. I do, man. That's terrible.
Yeah, so I think the option here is we need to provide nonviolent assistance to pregnant mothers, to their children, to urge the fathers to stay involved in this whole picture. But just because acts of violence will always be available to people in the black market to accomplish what they want to do. There will always be a subset of people who will resort to that. But most people, most women obey the law. Most people are law-abiding citizens. And so I believe if we were to make abortion illegal, most people would follow the law. The fact that it is legal, that teaches people, that it tells them there's nothing wrong with this. The law is also a teacher. So that's why it's important we have to change hearts. But we also have to change the law. We have to change hearts before the laws will change. But when the laws change, that affects the heart too.
Gene, thanks very much. You can probably hear the music. We have to take our top of the hour break, and we're going to come back and continue. So if you're on the line, please stay on the line. If you haven't called yet, there's one line open, 888-3187-884. Only pro-choice people can call today. Why are you pro-choice is our question for you, and then we'd like to have a conversation with you about it. We have gone long on several calls today, so that means some of you have waited, and I apologize for that. We're going to do our very best to get to you as quick as we can on the other side. We do value your call. We're going to try to get to every pro-choice caller that calls today. Why are you pro-choice? If you're a pro-choice person, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884.